All right. We will begin today's hearing of the Natural Resources Committee. It is Monday, February the 5th. It's 1:10 p.m. I'd like to call the meeting of the House Resources Committee to order. Members present are Representatives Birch, Representative Parrish, Representative Tallarico, Representative Rauscher, Representative Drummond, Representative Johnson, Vice Chair Representative Lincoln, Co-Chair Representative Tarr, and myself, Representative Josephson. Please let the record reflect that we have a quorum to conduct business. Assisting us today is our Recording Secretary, Deborah Tillinghast, and our LIO moderator, Eileen Keim. I remind members and those in the audience to please silence your cell phones. This afternoon, we will hear invited and possibly public testimony, which was noticed, regarding House Bill 322 that we took up on February the 2nd, Friday. The director of DEC's Division of Spill Prevention Response, Kristen Ryan, who testified Friday, might be able to join us. In fact, it looks like she is on for questions. So the answer is she can join us. Before we begin that invited testimony, do members have any questions of either the chair or Ms. Ryan before we begin? Yes, Representative Rauscher.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Is attention to move it out today, or are we just to go and listen to testimony?
No, the answer is no intention to move it out today. However, I will take the opportunity to advise the committee that I would like any amendments by 9:30 a.m. on Wednesday, because it would be the intent to move the bill or entertain a motion to move the bill on Wednesday night. And the 9:30 time should give you an extra little bit of time Wednesday morning. Usually the attorneys arrive at 8. I'm sure they don't want me to say this, but I think some amendments could be crafted swiftly, if that was your preference. Yes, 9:30 a.m. Wednesday the 6th. The 7th. Okay. So seeing no other questions, let's begin with testimony from Ms. Patty Saunders, representing the Alaska Community Action on Toxics. Ms. Saunders, are you in Anchorage at the moment?
Yes, I am in Anchorage.
All right. Can you put your name on the record? Tell us who you're affiliated with and provide your testimony.
My name is Patty Saunders. That's PATTISAUNDERS. I am representing today Alaska Community Action on Toxics.
Okay. Please proceed.
I also have a pardon?
Please continue.
I'm representing ACAT today, but I also have a personal interest in this bill, as I was one of the original members of the Prince William Sound Regional Citizen Advisory Council's Oil Spill Prevention and Response Committee. Over the course of several years, I volunteered thousands upon thousands of volunteer hours. And after the Exxon Valdez spill, and my goal at that point was to make sure it never happened again. I continue to have that as a goal, and I think that this bill contributes to that goal. So thank you to the co-chairs and the committee members for sponsoring HB 322. ACAT applauds the intent of HB 322 to impose meaningful penalties for oil spills, both as a deterrent and a way to compensate the citizens of this state who collectively own the state's resources, at least partially, for the damage to habitat and wildlife and the cost of restoration. So there are things in this bill that are excellent, and we believe that they're long overdue, for instance, including violations for spills from tanker trucks and requiring them to have contingency plans. We also agree with Section 19, which removes the prohibition on penalties related to discharges of ballast, pesticides, paint, underground tanks, and cruise ships. One of the primary goals of this bill, as described in the sponsor statement, is to adjust the penalties to a value that is representative of 2018 dollars. And in some cases, it does just that. For instance, in sections 4, 8, and 9, the penalties are roughly equivalent or higher than the 2018 equivalent. However, in sections 2 and 6, they double the amount that were imposed by the 1977 penalty statute, but the 2018 equivalents are twice that, i.e. four times the 1977 levels. So doubling it to twice the 1977 levels doesn't really meet the stated goal in the sponsor statement and doesn't actually reflect the amount of damage and the cost of restoration involved in an oil spill. So while we support 322 and its intent, we believe that sections 2 and 6 should be adjusted to reflect the fact that 2018 dollars, you'd need four times the amount that you had in 1977. So with those amendments, we would wholeheartedly support this bill. Even if we don't get those amendments, we believe that it is a step in the right direction. So we would support it in any event. But we hope that you'll take those under consideration to improve the rates in sections 2 and 6 to reflect the actual 2018 values, which is four times the 77 level. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Saunders. There are two questions for you. You may not have been aware that that's part of the deal, but it is. So I'll start with Representative Rauscher.
Thank you, the Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a question, and I believe your opening statement was that you believe that this bill will stop the future events like the Exxon Valdez from ever happening again. And so I'm trying to understand how this bill will do that. And the only thing I can come up with is that the inference is made that only safety concerns will happen if the penalties are stiffer. And am I wrong in that assumption here?
But yes, indeed, Representative Rauscher, you've stepped over. I wasn't clear, and I apologize for that, but your assumption is not what I meant to say. I think that penalties are one element in preventing spills in the future. They're not the only one, but they certainly are an important one, as the Oil Spill Commission that happened after 1989 described. So it is one of many things. I think that contingency plans are one of the best ways to prevent future spills, where companies that are transporting or drilling for oil are required to plan ahead for the things that everybody hopes won't happen. But we know that spills do happen for a variety of reasons, and planning ahead to think about the ways in which those events can be prevented or minimized or cleaned up once they happen in a swift way to prevent additional damage is excellent. So this does address that with the transportation of oil via tanker trucks, which have never been included before. The other ways of transporting and storing oil are already covered. But the penalties are meaningful, and they are a deterrent, and they also serve as a way to compensate the state for the damage to our state's resources. And so there's in both regards, they are meaningful. Both of them, to the extent that oil spills have no economic cost to the violators, the people who have allowed the spill to happen in one way or another. The cost of doing business is passed on to us, and there is no cost to the corporation or the owner. Then there's no incentive to keep spills from happening, to be the best and safest company you can be. So, yes, following everything that happened after the 1989 spill and in the Exxon Valdez, it's not the only kind of spill there is, but it's certainly a good example of what can happen when there aren't adequate protections for our state's resources, penalties being one of them.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Representative Birch.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for your testimony, and I am one member of the committee that's concerned about the regulatory cost that this is going to potentially impose on our commercial businesses and operations. I see this as, you know, unnecessary, burdensome, and perhaps even duplicative. But to your goal of not having another Exxon Valdez, I think on March 24th, 1989 was that terrible date. And your goal, I could say, has been achieved. It's been almost 29 years, and we haven't seen another tragedy like that. And I'm interested in hearing additional testimony, but not only from folks that are concerned about tightening up spill language and so forth, but also from folks that have some sort of a sense as to how this is going to impact the day-to-day lives of regular Alaskans. Thank you.
In response to that, Representative Birch, I would suggest that you make a comparison between the cost per gallon at the pump in 2018 and the cost per gallon at the pump in 1989. And I would suggest to you that the cost that everyday Alaskans are paying far exceeds the doubling of the penalties that would be incurred by a violator of our oil spill statutes and regulations. So if we were to extrapolate the profits that they make these days, I mean, their prices have gone up and up and up since 1989, and their profits are huge. And it was just reported that ConocoPhillips had, what was it, several hundred thousand dollars of profit, or $1 million worth of profit in 2017 alone. So in every respect, whether it is producing the oil, transporting the oil, refining the oil, and selling it back to consumers such as everyday Alaskans, those prices have gone up and up and up. And the penalties for spilling have not gone up and up and up. And so I don't think it's fair to say that somehow realigning the penalties to 2018 values of the dollar is in any way imposing excess burdens on the oil industry. In any part of the oil industry, they're all making money. They're all making more than they made in 1977 and 1989. If the penalties stay the same, they become less effective as a deterrent, nor do they reflect the cost to clean up or the damage to the value of the damage to the environment.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. We're now going to move on to Mr. Doug Mertz, who is in the room. Mr. Mertz, if you'll come forward and put your name on the record and give us your affiliation, if any, and your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Douglas Mertz. I'm a resident of Juneau. I'm also on the staff of the Prince William Sound Regional Citizens Advisory Council as their legislative liaison here in Juneau. The RCAC, as most of you probably know, is a coalition, a nonprofit coalition of interested parties with the common intent of protecting the assets and people of Prince William Sound, and that includes businesses, tribes, commercial fishermen, environmentalists, and basically everyone else within Prince William Sound. As to this bill, HB 322, we are enthusiastic supporters of adjusting the penalties to make up for inflation. Right now, with each passing year, due to inflation, the effective penalty rates become less and less, to the point where they can be simply a minor cost of doing business. This bill, as it's drafted now, would take care of that problem now and in the future, no matter what the inflation rate is. We think this is necessary to maintain effective deterrence and effective incentives to doing the job right. And in view of what we have seen in oil spill enforcement over the decades, I've been involved in oil spills in this case, first as an assistant attorney general and then working for our CAC since the 1970s with all the big ones. And what we have seen again and again is you have a big spill, interest becomes high, legislative and regulatory response are high and strong, and then over the next few years it all drops. Enforcement goes down, interest among regulators goes down, interest among legislators in doing anything goes down until the next big spill, and then they go up again, and then slowly down, and then they go up again with the next big spill. That's the cycle that we have seen in all these years. What we would like to see is some regulatory and legislative provisions that maintain the requirements for doing the job right in a constant level. This is particularly important now as there is more and more interest in new oil exploration and production both in the state and just off the coast, and as the federal government seems to be intent to withdraw its more stringent regulation and safety measures regarding exploration and production. Because that's happening, it is incumbent on the state, if we're going to invite people in and say, you are part of our state, part of our economy, to tell them that you are going to do it right. You are going to prevent spills. You are going to spend all the attention that is necessary to making sure that spills don't happen and that we don't have another Exxon Valdez or some of the other spills here that have been had a potential for being devastating. And although it's true we haven't had another Exxon Valdez, we've come very close over the years, so we cannot be complacent. I want to say RCAC has a limited scope of interest under its governing statutes. That is oil transportation and handling within Prince William Sound, which means truck rollovers aren't part of RCAC's remit. I can tell you personally, though, as somebody who has dealt with these as an enforcer for the state since the 70s, they are a constant problem. Each one is relatively small compared to other types of spills, and yet they happen so often, so many times, that it just begs to be addressed. The requirements of this bill, extending the most common and easily understood requirements to truckers, haulers of oil products, only makes sense, and it can be done in a way which is not onerous, which does not add a regulatory layer of any real problem. We notice that the contingency plan requirement is for transporters of crude oil only, but not refined product, which is a bit of a surprise to us since many, many forms of refined products are more toxic than crude oil, and overall, hauling gasoline, diesel fuel, home heating oil happens much more than hauling crude in this state, and there are more spills of it. So we think that that should be reexamined. Those were the only points I had to make other than to those of us in the field, this is a serious issue with constant threats, and the only question for us is when will the next big one happen, and what can we do now to make sure that it doesn't happen for a long, long time.
Thank you, Mr. Mertz. I think Representative Birch, did you have a question?
I do.
Okay, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for your testimony and your service with the RCAC. One question I had regarding the are you aware of any spills that have occurred subsequent to the Exxon Valdez in the area that you, you know, kind of oversee or have been involved with that have not been you know, managed, addressed, or mitigated, if you will, by the responsible party?
No. We've had some near misses of some big ones. Tankers that almost lost their cargo, but it hasn't happened. And I think the reason is Prince William Sound has the best oil spill prevention and response system in the country, maybe in the world now. And our job at RCAC is to make sure it's maintained that way.
I would echo that, and having worked at Alyeska Pipeline, I'm much aware of that capability and certainly the positive engagement that the RCAC has had in assuring that that is ever vigilant and always ready. I'm reminded that you know, close only accounts in horseshoes, and that you know, when you get into you know, what coulda, shoulda, woulda happened, I'm actually very pleased to learn that there hasn't been anything of any significant consequence has not been mitigated or addressed in the ensuing 29 years since the Exxon Valdez. We have we had testimony here today that you know, we're referring to a doubling of fees. Well, the fact is, in some cases, there's a quadrupling of fees. 500% goes from $5,000 up to $25,000 a day, which is I think is a pretty significant number, particularly if it's a daily rate. And do you see that offsetting some sort of a problem that you're aware of in the transportation business, or kind of outside the RCAC world? But I'm just curious about that.
I think so. In this sense, you will notice that the larger fees or the larger increases here are tied to responsibility for spills and people, operators who do not take the most common required steps to avoid spills. So we're going from negligent spills to penalties for things that go beyond negligent, but really are, you folks knew about this possibility and you really should have done something here, and any responsible operator would have. That sort of scenario justifies higher fees or higher penalties to get people's attention and make sure they do it right and maintain it right.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Roche.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. Through the chair, you said the most common required steps are not taken. What are those?
I was speaking in generalities, and you have to look at each instance because it's different between pipelines, wells, trucks, tankers. It's all different for all of them. I would say that the number one general requirement that has made a huge difference is requiring contingency plans to have people with some knowledge and expertise actually sit down and consider what could go wrong, and if it goes wrong, what we can do to prevent it from going wrong, and if it does go wrong, what's the best way to respond. People who don't do that kind of advanced planning are really playing games with our resources and our livelihoods.
Through the chair, and you feel that, and you feel that isn't going on?
Well, I certainly think that with tanker trucks, it hasn't been going on. That's a problem that has been, I wouldn't say it's like mosquitoes, but a lot of mosquitoes who carry diseases, maybe. It's a problem when you get so many of them every year.
And through the chair.
Follow up.
Thank you. So you figure that this bill will create that?
It'll
happen.
It'll certainly help to have contingency planning in place for fleets of tanker trucks.
And through the chair, I guess one more. Then the tanker truck situation will begin to start planning for contingencies of what could go wrong because of this bill. Is that what you're saying?
this will require it.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you.
I would also say that it doesn't have to be particularly onerous if a operator of trucks, owner of trucks, contracts with oil spill cleanup service companies, then they can basically import or piggyback on that those companies' existing contingency plan and preparation work. And it becomes, I won't say it's never a major cost, but it's certainly not a catastrophic, debilitating cost to do that.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I was, I don't have the exact spot in the bill, but it talks about increasing the penalty. So if it's, you know, economically, there's other opportunities, say, for the company not to work on the spill, but to do other things that would make more sense for them monetarily, that one of the penalties that is put in the bill is to make it so that is not the case, that it could be their penalties can be raised so that they have to pay attention to the spill. I guess my question on that, because that's a fairly significant piece of it, do you feel that's a problem now, that spills get ignored because they need manpower elsewhere, or?
I wouldn't put it in terms of spills getting ignored, but in terms of preventive measures getting ignored and planning for spill responses getting ignored as people try to save money for their enterprises.
I'll look for the line in the bill so I can actually ask you a very specific question on that. I'm not sure I gave you a really clear question to answer, but I think it directly speaks to the spill cleanup.
Mr. Mertz, I think she's referring to a new term of art. It's not a new term of art, but it is for purposes of this section of Title 46, economic benefit of noncompliance.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that that's what she's referring to, but I think it might be. And that's one of the considerations under the legislation that a court could entertain and see what benefit was reaped by ignoring the potentiality of some other harm. I think that's what's at issue.
It's a concept that has been around for a long time. You don't want to have spills and spill responses simply be a cost of doing business where they can choose not to do the right kind of work in order to save money or devote their resources to something else. But I don't think we see anywhere where it's actually been applied in any rigorous way where a court or other decider actually looks at how much they saved by not complying.
I have first Representative Birch, then Parrish, then Tarr. Representative Birch.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Last week we had a contingent of the Alaska Truckers Association through here. And in the course of that, we did talk about a range of issues, but it was my understanding that they do have contingency plans, at least in the, you know, so in other words, they're not just kind of running around willy-nilly without, some sort of strategy if the worst should happen. And the other aspect of this that bothers me is I live in Anchorage. And most folks in South Central Alaska, I have natural gas heat at my home. We rent a home here through Session. The home that we rent here is powered by hydro. It's electric heat. There's no fuel tanks. Okay, so there's nobody delivering 500 gallons of fuel on a repetitive basis to my here in Juneau or here in South Central. We lived in Fairbanks for 25 years. I had, about three times a year, I had to have the fuel truck come out and load my house. I am concerned that the unintended consequence of, trying to do the right thing here is that we're going to be layering up some very significant and costly, impediments to just doing business in the refining fuel product world. And that gives me some concern. When we start, you know, doing doubling or quadrupling or quintupling fines, it really has, you know, I'm concerned about it. And I'm going to be looking forward to, you know, maybe hearing more from the trucking industry and the people that actually would be impacted, people that burn fuel oil and actually might have a concern about how this would potentially impact them. But anyway, I do like my electric heat here in Juneau. It's very good.
Me too.
Yeah. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Representative Birch. Just a question for you. You're not suggesting that we can't enhance penalties because some people would be impacted more than others based on how they consume fuel, because then we just could never enhance penalties. We would have to wait till everyone's on the same system. Is that what you're suggesting?
With your invitation, Mr. Chairman, exactly. I think the fact is that people who find themselves in a community that relies on fuel products that are transported by rail, you know, and I don't know that this really addresses rail transportation, but by rail or truck or snow machine, however you move that fuel product around, if you get into a situation where you start layering up huge penalties, and granted you might step back from it, but if you got huge penalties involved, it adds to cost. Regulation equals cost, and the more we add to regulation, and I get, you know, we haven't had any testimony here that says there's, you know, all these spills are happening in the Prince William Sound area. Exxon Valdez happened 29 years ago. I mean, we've been using that for a boogeyman for 30 years almost, and you know, at some point in time, we need to realize that, you know, responsible operators are doing a responsible job. If we've got a problem, let's fix it. But I, you know, I think this is a solution actually in search of a problem. And I just aside from the genesis of this, Mr. Chairman, I resent having my name on it as a member of the committee, but I think this is really is going to have some real costly entanglements we need to take a look at. I didn't mean to, you know, I think we're taking public testimony right now, sir.
Representative Parrish.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And through the chair, Mr. Mertz, you had the suggestion that we should broaden the need for contingency plans, which I'm happy to hear are already standard practice, to include tankers, commercial motor vehicles, transporting other refined products of oil, and you mentioned that they might be more harmful. So would you prefer to elaborate on that, or should I direct the question to Director Ryan of SPAR?
Well, I think she would have her own perspective from where she sits on the potential harm from different kinds of products being hauled by different kinds of means. All I can tell you is that from my experience, we always have this constant series of truck rollovers within the state, and some of the products that they spill are considerably toxic and go into the streams, which go into the rivers and the lakes. And that's a harm that should not be ignored.
Thank you, Mr. Mertz. And I'll follow up with Director Ryan in a bit. And just a comment while it's on my mind. It seems, look at Section 13, the certificate must include the name of the facility, pipeline, tank vessel, commercial motor vehicle, or oil barge for which it's issued. Just a place to consider in the future. Would we be as well served by extending it to a fleet of motor vehicles if someone's got a dozen similar commercial motor vehicles? And I'll just leave that in the air.
Well, you can certainly have an amendment drafted, but I encourage you to make sure that the terms you use in the amendment are well-defined.
Certainly.
Okay. Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I did just want to bring up, you know, Representative Birch is mentioning the, you know, the Alaska example with the Exxon Valdez tragedy, and thankfully it has been quite a number of years, but We shouldn't forget that the Deepwater Horizon, which is one of our three owner operators on the North Slope, was involved in that horrible tragedy that was just a few years ago that resulted in $4 billion in fees, fines, penalties, restoration, and they were found guilty of 14 crimes. There were 14 criminal counts. So it's not like this is something that's ancient history where we don't have any examples of it. People were killed in that incident. So we do have a responsibility to make sure that we have good operators who have safety plans, and this is part of safety planning. And it's not just about the environment, and this example reminds us that human lives could be lost. We're talking about volatile fuels being transported, and when there's a big car crash, people could be killed. And I just wonder if you can comment on that in terms of your experience on the RCAC. But I certainly, I don't want to wait for the next Deepwater Horizon. I don't want to wait for the next Mount Polly disaster before we stand up and take notice. And I can just imagine if one of these fuel tankers, you know, had a spill in the summer and along the Kenai and shut down the entire fishing season, we'd have thousands of Alaskans up in arms. And so, you know, from your experience in other areas, is it common that or from what you know with your work on the RCAC, would it be common that we would, you know, pay attention to these fees and penalties? Again, making note that no one will pay them if you're a safe operator with a good plan and you don't have a spill. No one will pay these. These are fees or penalties that would be assessed after an operator, you know, makes a mistake or is criminally negligent, like in the case of the Deepwater Horizon. And so I just, you know, don't know if you work with these groups around the country, certainly your experience as an attorney, but I mean, I would think that other folks are looking at these kind of fines and penalties for the same reasons that we are, both to protect the environment but also to protect human lives.
Well, you've hit on an important point, and I can only say that this is part of that cycle of which I spoke. After the Deepwater Horizon, there was increased interest in penalties and preparedness methods. There was a very deep interest in creating a kind of RCAC for the Gulf region, and there has been an interest in creating such an RCAC for the North Slope here. But then after a while, the interest goes down. And as I also mentioned, the federal government's desire to be a strict enforcer of safety regulations in well blowouts goes down. And that is something of great concern. It may be that the state will need to step up to basically replace what the feds are doing now. But if we don't and they don't, then you'll see the same accumulating lack of interest, which will lead to spills.
Thank you.
I have one more.
Representative Drummond.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm not sure if Mr. Mertz is the appropriate person to talk to about this, but we're talking about regulating trucks that transport crude oil. Is that correct?
That's what's before us. Yes, okay. Representative.
Not diesel to or fuel oil to crude oil and fuel oil are two different items, right? So, in terms of impacting those folks in Fairbanks and other places that take fuel deliveries. And also, I'm glad we're talking about the economic benefit of not complying, because I'm sure we all remember that Exxon was forgiven $4.5 billion of their penalty, of the $5 billion penalty that was originally required of them, and thousands of Alaskans suffered as a result. Thank you, Mr. Mertz, for coming and speaking to us.
Representative Birch.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There's testimony regarding constant truck rollovers, and I was just wondering if we have access to that information as to the frequency and number of truck rollovers. I know where that came from, but
I don't have it. I know the DEC keeps that information. They're the ones to ask.
I can get you that information. I've seen it myself, and there is a link or a site within DEC's website, I guess.
Thank you.
All right.
And one more.
Yes, Representative Drummond.
When we talk about things not happening since 1989, the document that Director Ryan presented to us the other day on page 4 She's got 4.5 million gallons spilled in 1997 or thereabouts, and I'm going to touch base with her, too, and find out exactly what that was, because that was a pretty large spill, in my opinion, and I don't know, I don't remember what it was. Do any of you?
I don't. I don't think that's the BP corrosion spill. I think that comes after 1997.
I don't know.
But I'm not sure. All right. Thank you, Mr. Mertz. We will now move to Mr. Shavelson at Cook and Lit Keeper. Mr. Shavelson, if you'll give us your name, your affiliation, and your testimony, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Bob Shavelson. I'm the advocacy director for Cook and Lit Keeper. We're a public interest group supported by thousands of Alaskans that are working for clean water and healthy salmon around South Central Alaska. I've also been a board member on the Cook Inlet Regional Citizens Advisory Council, and I'm currently a board member representing the Oil Spill Region of Alaska Coalition on the Prince William Sound Regional Citizens Advisory Council. And I'd like to speak today generally in favor of HB 322. For the past 22 years with Cook Inlet Keeper, I've seen hundreds of spills from pipelines and platforms to trucks and storage tanks. And unfortunately, the penalties for the spills have increasingly become just a cost of doing business in Alaska. And from my perspective, what I've seen is a company has a spill, brings in a contractor to try to clean it up. It may or may not pay a relatively small fine. Then more often than not, it goes back to business as usual. And what that means is that the current penalty regime does not do what penalties are designed to do, and that's to deter future violations and to send a strong signal to industry that violations impair our public land and water resources and should be penalized appropriately. And one of the main reasons that we've heard about before, and that the reason that the current system is broken, is largely because the penalties have not kept up with inflation, so it's important to inflation-proof those. I also support what Ms. Saunders said earlier, that Sections 2 and 6 need to be a little more robust if we're actually going to keep up with actual inflation. And I guess now I'll just touch on the issue that just came up, and it's the oil trucking, and we support sea plans for that, too. And I think we're particularly well situated here because being from Homer in the Kenai Peninsula, we've seen a company, Bluecrest, come in, and they're producing oil from the Cosmopolitan Unit, which is adjacent to Storiski Creek on the lower part of the Kenai Peninsula. And because there's no pipeline up to the Tesoro Refinery, Bluecrest routinely runs several trucks a day north on the Sterling Highway, and higher truck traffic is forecast if they hit anticipated production in the coming months and years. And my experience with Bluecrest, they've been open and forthright about their plans. They've generally done a good job reducing risk around the drilling operations. But the riskiest part of Bluecrest's business plan involves moving the oil north, because the route between the pad and the refinery crosses a number of important salmon streams. Some you may have heard of, some not. Storiski Creek, Deep Creek, the Neltic River, and of course the Kisilov River and the Kenai Rivers. I think we all know as Alaskans that driving on icy roads is risky, whatever you're driving, and our stream and river crossings can be especially challenging. And it goes without saying that these rivers and creeks and streams are important drivers for our tourism and our sport and our commercial and our subsistence economies. So it's pretty clear that a spill in a river moves quickly. So you really need to have a rapid response there. I think the contingency plan helps do that, so everybody knows what their role is, and there's ample response assets at the ready in case there's an accident. So we support that provision, too. And I guess in just response, I've heard some comments about regulatory costs, and, you know, there are costs to producing and moving and using oil. And I guess the question when you get into penalties and such is who's going to bear those costs? Is it going to be our publicly owned land and water and fishery resources, or are we going to embrace something that's more fair and equitable, that spreads the costs around to our society and allows a company to internalize those costs and push them down the line? So with that, I would say thank you for the opportunity. If anybody has a question, I'd be happy to try to answer it.
Question. Thank you, Mr. Shavelson. Questions for Mr. Shavelson? I don't see any. We appreciate your testimony very much. We have one more invited person. He is Steve Catalund of the Cook Inlet Region Citizens Advisory Council. Mr. Catalund, are you there?
Yes, good afternoon. My name is Steve Catalano, That's C-A-T-A-L-A-N-O. I'm here on behalf of Cook Inlet Regional Citizen Advisory Council. The council is a nonprofit corporation organized and federally mandated under the provisions of Section 5002 of the Oil Pollution Act of 1990, exclusively for the oversight, monitoring, assessing, and evaluation of oil spill prevention, safety and response plans, terminal and oil tanker operations, and environmental impacts of oil tanker and oil terminal operations in Cook Inlet. The council consists of 13 members from seven Cook Inlet communities, Alaska Native groups, commercial fishing and aquaculture, tourism, recreational and environmental interest groups that have a significant stake in the environment and resources at risk from oil pollution, or excuse me, oil production and transportation in the region. We've reviewed House Bill 322 and support the proposed amendment in its current form to update the current civil penalty amounts for the discharge of oil to the environment, to provide a meaningful incentive for the safe handling of oil, and to ensure that the public does not bear substantial losses from oil pollution, including a mechanism to annually increase those penalties based on the Consumer Price Index for Anchorage, Alaska, using the index for January 2018 as the reference base index, and support for enhanced civil penalties to deter future noncompliance. We feel it's important to have in place a mechanism that discourages oil discharges to the environment and to encourage oil spill prevention and a prompt and complete cleanup by the responsible party when prevention measures have failed. I'd like to thank the committee for their time and extending the invitation to make this comment.
Thank you, Mr. Catalano, and I could certainly read your name, but it was not typed properly. Sorry. Not that I'm pointing fingers, I just didn't see it. Any questions for Mr. Catalano, Representative Parrish?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Catalano, for your testimony. Is it your experience that in the event of a spill, whether large or small, the mitigation done by the responsible party is sufficient to offset the damage to your fisheries?
Well, sir, I can tell you that we're very fortunate here in Cook Inlet to have responsible operators and good oversight by the state. And I think that combination is part of a good recipe for a complete response.
All right. So it looks like about 15,000 gallons were spilled there last year. Are you familiar with any of those?
Well, if those were crude oil spills, I was.
I don't know. It's not broken out on this presentation. Thank you, Mr. Catalano.
Mr. Catalano, this is Chairman Andy Josephson. I have a question for you just for a little bit of context. My memory is that the Prince William Sound Regional Citizens Advisory Council is an arm of, I don't know if it's Open 90 or, but essentially it's a perpetually funded institution as sort of a caretaker of the sound. And the Cook Inlet version is, for historical reasons, a similar organization but doesn't have the same sort of staffing and resources. Do I have that right?
Sort of.
Okay.
Both organizations are formed under the same section of OPA 90, Oil Pollution Act of 1990, and we are both tasked with the same responsibilities. We do have a smaller staff here in Cook Inlet than Prince William Sound does. We do have a different metric for our funding than what Prince William Sound has.
Any questions for Mr. Catalano? I don't see any. So that ends the invited testimony. I'm going to actually, Mr. Catalano, my co-chair, Representative Tarr, has a question for you.
Did we lose you? Still there?
No, I'm still here.
Oh, okay. Thank you. I just wondered, and I thought you might be a person who would be knowledgeable about this, if you wanted to comment at all about the activities that the companies go through to sort of like keep their sea plans up to date, or just describe that a little bit.
Well, spill contingency plans are on a 5-year cycle to be renewed. So each 5-year cycle, a plan holder has to submit an application to the state. The state reviews that. It goes out for public comment. The public's allowed to review it. Then those comments go back to the state, and the state puts together a request for additional information that basically comprises the comments that were provided and the state's comments and the plan holder's responses to those comments. I'm not sure if that answers your question or not.
That does. Thank you. And I just thought that was something that hadn't really come up yet, just in terms of the sea plans. And just there are also drills, so, you know, sort of like live drills, if you will, so that folks can practice what would happen in the event of an emergency.
Yeah, they're all required to do an annual drill. And some of the operators have multiple days of drills for different facilities. Along with the back to the contingency plans, anytime there's a major change to the plan has to be amended, and that goes through a public review process as well.
Thank you.
Okay, Representative Birch.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a point on process. I understand that completes the invited testimony.
It does.
How were the
Let me be clear. It does for the day, but we're hearing from the industry on Wednesday night.
Yes.
Thank
you. And we actually, just so you know, we had calendared the operator, Mr. Johnson of Bluecrest, but he's en route in the air or something like that.
Okay, that was my concern. And then also, it's my understanding there's a definition on page 9 here that says oil means crude oil. This is for the benefit of Representative Drummond. Oil means crude oil, petroleum, and any substance refined from petroleum. And I assume that can include asphalt, chapstick, polar fleece. I don't know. I say that tongue-in-cheek. But anything refined from oil, which is certainly refined oil, would include the stuff that's coming out of our refineries at last. Thank you, sir.
Okay. I don't see any other questions. At this time, I'm going to open up brief at ease. There's two things I want to highlight now. One, really. The definition that was just cited by Representative Birch of oil applies to Section 12, administrative penalties for discharges of oil and crude oil. It doesn't, to my knowledge, have application beyond that. But at this time, I would like to open up public testimony at 2:03. And is there anyone in the room that would like to testify as a member of the public about House Bill 322? I don't see any, and I don't see any online. So we're going to leave public testimony open for Wednesday night. Just one moment. And so just to do some housekeeping here, my office and DEC are working on responses to unanswered questions members posed regarding the bill last Friday. It's conceivable you've actually gotten some of those answers. If you haven't, that's because I haven't sort of looked at them myself. But those are coming to you. There were just 3 or 4. One was my own. If any questions about the bill occur to you after this meeting, you could pose them to me or Tom, my aide, Tom Atkinson, to my left at any time. If you would like to propose any amendments to House Bill 322, please email those to the House Resources account or to Tom Atkinson by 9:30 a.m. Wednesday the 7th. And the plan relative to this bill is to take it up again on Wednesday night at 6:30 p.m. members who are new, and I think that's Representative Lincoln. Occasionally we meet at night. I think it happened two or three times. It can be sort of long when it does happen. I don't know that that's going to happen this Wednesday. But that's when we will come back to House Bill 322, and we'll be hearing from the amendments, from the industry. The daytime on Wednesday, the good folks at Alyeska and Edison Schuest
have Schuest.
Schuest. That's what I said. No, thank you for the pronunciation guide. They have asked us to talk to them about their spill prevention and response, and we are entertaining that, and we're certainly welcome to or willing to accommodate that request. So that's going to be our regular Wednesday hearing at 1 o'clock on February 7th. Then Friday, February 9th, we're going to take up a bill that I believe the other body is already hearing. It's a governor's bill. It's House Bill 305, Oil Hazardous Substances Cleanups and Reimbursements. I haven't looked at it, but I think it has to do with domestic spills. That is, they're sort of not commercial. And I've neglected to mention that also on Wednesday, along with hearing from Edison Schuest, we are going to continue our hearing on House Bill 217, Raw Milk Sales Food Exemption from Regulations. We'll be doing public testimony. Any questions about any of that? Yes, Representative Birch.
We've got a deadline for amendments on Wednesday morning, and we've got public testimony and invited testimony coming in Wednesday evening. It seems like it's a little cart before the horse-ish there, in that it would seem like you'd want to wait till after the public testimony before you have a deadline on amendments that may be may benefit the proposal.
Okay. I think that your point is well taken, and therefore the chair is going to, because I think that time would allow for us to take up the amendments on Friday afternoon under bills previously heard or scheduled, that I would ask that the amendments be turned in by Thursday afternoon at 5. Anything else before the committee? Representative Rauscher.
I just want to thank the chair for the understanding on those amendments. Thank you.
All right, so we'll adjourn at early, for the record, at 2:09.
Wow.